Thank you for joining us today. I'm your host, Tracy Bennett. In studio with me are certified financial planners Tyler Cook and Tony Payne. And today we're getting into divorce after 50. Complex and emotional, but some information that deserves some careful planning. So I'm going to get right into the topic, breaking up without breaking down, planning through a gray divorce. Let's hit the big one first, and that's taxes right out of the gate. Unless you want to kind of offer any...
No, set the stage a little, right, maybe. Yeah, again, the idea.
In my mind, taxation, when I think about, I've been with my husband for 44 years and married about 39 now, and I can't imagine what this looks like, but I think this would be a tax nightmare.
It could be, but again, I guess even backing up before jumping into just taxes or tax specific, I mean, the idea that you've talked about a long-term marriage. I mean, the idea that you built a financial life together, money will matter in this divorce. Mm-hmm. So if you're to that point where, hey, we're separating, we're parting ways, it's really two separate plans now, well, money matters. Mm-hmm. And I think from the very beginning, before we jump to taxes, the idea of framing it that way, mm-hmm. because that can lead to big tax decisions mm-hmm. or implications.
Yeah, you nailed it. I try to think of somebody, they've worked together their whole life to build that nest egg, and now you're talking about how do you split it. Tax ramifications are top of the list to consider.
There are things where, the typical, I might say, divorce attorney strategy may rely upon, I'll say, a traditional approach. You know, so-and-so keeps the house, keeps mm-hmm. the children in the house in the school district. That's part of the settlement or the structure of it. But later in life, when maybe the kids are out, the house is paid for, it's a different approach. Mm-hmm. So the idea of, you know what is, I hate to say in this for me, but what is in this for my future, for my plan? That's the attitude I think you have to have. And working with your attorney, working with a professional, that can lead to, you know what, do I need money now? Because if I need money now, that's one type of account. And that may lead to better tax treatment. Mm-hmm. But if you say, you know what, I've got this settlement, the stream of payments, I'm still working, maybe I don't need that. Mm-hmm. Well, then that may lead to, well, I like IRAs or I like 401ks because that's not something I need to take income from today. Mm-hmm. So that's where the tax picture will really come in from, you know, what assets are we talking about?
Right.
And they've changed those tax rules over the years too. It used to be where alimony paid was tax deductible to a certain extent. Now it's not. Depending upon when the divorce took place and when all the legal things were settled. So paying attention to that is critical. And to your point, income now, income later, which is going to be more important. But in a gray divorce, you said over 50. Tony's got a little gray here at 40. But the point being, it's the idea, though, is you're more established. So you have that wealth, the split, and there can be a right way to do it and a wrong way to do it. There's no necessarily good way in that scenario because we're talking about divorce. But mm-hmm. from a tax side, there is a better and a worse scenario.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. I can't imagine the process of splitting accounts. And in my research, I came across the QDROs, and we can explain qualified domestic relation orders. I've never heard that at our office before, and maybe it's something Do you want to get into that?
Yeah. It's essentially a tax law that allows, a judge kind of signs off on it, but use an example of a 401k is probably the most common thing you'd see, but retirement plans, you can take that 401k and actually split it between the spouses without any initial tax ramifications. Whereas if you tried to take money out of a 401k without that order, you would be paying taxes and potentially penalties. So think if somebody's got $1 million in their 401k, they're going to split it 50-50 between spouses. You can do that without any tax ramifications. The other spouse who doesn't have the account basically gets one opened in their name, mm-hmm. and they treat it just like a 401k as the spouse who saved the money along the way. So it's a tax advantaged way to split the assets. Now on the back end, you still have to pay tax and take the money out. Mm-hmm. It's just that initial split, there's no tax ramifications.
Which you would do anyway, right? In most cases. You would pay taxes on it when you were taking distributions.
Correct.
Anyway,
so. Yeah, depending upon the types of contributions. Yep.
Okay.
And to frame this even a little differently, I can't help Tyler but challenge a little bit. You know, sometimes divorce is the best decision someone's made.
Could be.
And if you've been struggling along for those 20, 30 years for the kids or the family or something like that, and you know what, this is your second start. This is that freedom starting over. That's, again, where the money matters and the idea of which assets do I pick or choose? Which ones are strategic for me?
Right.
As much as there's the dollar amount, maybe even emotional attachments on certain things, the idea of it's not just usually an attorney, but maybe working with a financial planner to say, okay, what are the ramifications if I take that 401k versus if I take the business or if I take something else?
What emotional attachments would you have to an account,
though? Well, more like an asset. So think the house.
Oh, okay.
Like for example, let's say you have $1 million 401k and $1 million valued house. Do you just let one spouse takes the 401k, the other one gets the house? Is that the best planning move? Probably not. If you're the spouse that wasn't working in that scenario, if you're a homemaker scenario and you get the house, that's great. That's what you want. But how's that going to provide for your lifestyle?
Mm-hmm. The same thing with even Social Security benefits, pension benefits. I mean, you mentioned the quid pro quo earlier, that qualified domestic relations order. But that's where, again, work with an attorney, work with a professional, because the idea of, well, they have this pension, there's nothing I could do about it, or they have that. That's where the judges can get in and give a letter to a big custodian like a Fidelity or someone like that and say, this is what you need to do because this is what the court has ordered. So it's a very powerful thing that, again, perhaps you're in that bad situation where it's not amicable, you're not communicating. Again, get the professionals involved and make sure that you're beginning that second life on the best footing that you're entitled to.
And so it sounds like you have to be prepared to ask the questions of the attorney. I've never heard of a quid pro before.
Yeah,
and
yeah.
I come from a long line.
That's a good thing, Tracy.
It is. I've come from a long line of divorces on my side of the family. Never heard that term before.
It was always
you get this account, I get this account, you get this, I get that.
And that's why.
Or you get nothing.
It's just a figment, I guess. That's why you've never heard of it. It usually just happens, if I can say it like that, not something for us to get hung up on. But the idea is when you're working with the attorney and the court says you can do this, that's what avoids someone paying taxes on it.
Mm-hmm.
So you might say, oh, I got half of the IRA. But if you called their, quote, tax person or their investment person and they send you a check, that's a lot different than a rollover that's permitted through that quid pro.
Mm-hmm.
So that's where the details kind of like, again, I may not have heard about it. It might be taxes paid that I never knew about because, hey, it's just an afterthought for some people.
Yeah.
So it's a great thing to bring up.
Yeah, that's a gem. So if somebody has an IRA and they need to put it in the mix, let's talk about the difference between transferring and rolling over in a settlement and how the taxes play into that mix.
Yeah, very similar to what we've been discussing as far as the process, but a rollover preserves the tax status. So you go from one IRA to another IRA or a 401k to a rollover IRA. If it's what's called a direct rollover, that preserves the tax hit. So you're just moving it from one account to the other, no tax ramifications today. Again, doesn't prevent you in the future from having to pay taxes when you take the money out, but it's step one of the process of dividing assets. Same thing for an IRA, 401k. You can throw those retirement plans in the same bucket for the most part.
If you think about the rules, like when you leave an employer and you have some flexibility there of rolling things over, but you have to roll it over to the right plan type, the right same kind of account, a lot of that applies with what we're talking about here. You know, when you're splitting up retirement accounts, and sometimes those are the easy ones. I know you mentioned earlier, may not have an emotional attachment to the IRA, but it might be the collection of things. It might be that vehicle. It might be something like that where we need to make sure that we're planning that out.
Mm-hmm. And don't forget about the beneficiary reassignment.
Huge, not only on your retirement accounts, but things like life insurance, other things you may forget. We've actually seen stories where people forget to update that.
Oops.
Yeah, big oops.
Or where you might have updated something and that qualified domestic relations order says, no, you were mandated to carry insurance on that spouse. You can't cancel it. You can't change it. So that can also be part of that qualified domestic relations order. You know, you might have to pay for someone's college or you might have to take care of something. That's where, again, the family court or the judge may be creative and say, you know what, this is how we're doing it. So you need to be mindful of that.
Good information. We've done a few podcasts on Social Security, but let's quip the rules in a divorce settlement, if you don't mind.
Yeah, the one that I think, too, is what we call a 10-year rule. So basically, if you were married to your spouse for 10 years, you get divorced in year 11. You as the spouse, in this case, it's the scenario where you're not the breadwinner, right? You're the spouse and you may get some spousal benefits. You're actually entitled to up to half of your prior spouse's Social Security benefit amount. That doesn't reduce the other spouse's amount. It's just the calculation is you get up to 50% of what they were entitled to.
My brain just exploded. Wait a minute. So I've worked in tandem with my spouse.
Yep.
That may not be the scenario we're talking about. So I'll kind of leave a little there. So what Tyler's describing is maybe why they created it. Let's talk why.
Okay.
You know, you've been that spouse that was the homemaker, stayed home with the children. It's 25 years later and we're talking about a divorce.
Okay.
Well, that's where you're entitled to up to half of that, I'll say the working spouse's benefit. But like you said, if you were both working away and you have your own benefit and that's bigger than the half, well, then we're not talking about the spousal mm-hmm. so much as what did you qualify for on your benefit.
Yeah, and to go further with that, even if you were working and it was less than half of your spouse's, you would collect your portion plus whatever it takes to get you to 50% of your spouse's. So it's very complex, obviously.
Okay.
I could do a whole show on that.
That makes better sense.
Yeah. There's a joke out there. Remember Larry King? You guys remember Larry King?
I do.
He had like six wives or something like that. The joke was like, I think this is accurate. He was not married for more than 10 years to any one of them. So like Social Security was saved because otherwise six of them would have been coming after and collecting half of his.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Larry. Did you see his last wife?
I did not.
Yeah. She was like 30.
Oh, okay.
Yeah. I'm old enough to remember Larry King.
I used to watch it as a kid.
I don't know that you guys are, but
I'll never forget that. Yeah. Anyways, tangent here, but yeah.
So I recall years ago in my family, a family member was divorced, lost their second spouse, their second spouse passed away, and they were able to take the Social Security benefits of the first spouse who is still alive. Is that still in existence? Can you choose which spouse you're taking? I guess that's a better question. If I've been married twice, can I choose which one I want to take?
I honestly don't know. I don't know.
I wouldn't know it's about choice as much as what you qualify for. So you would take the highest benefit you qualify for.
Yeah, that's a and call that's to the Social Security office, right? And figure out what your options are.
Okay.
So, but yeah, go ahead.
I thought that was interesting. I remember being impacted that in my teens. I thought that was strange.
Yeah,
how weird is that I remember that?
Well, and there could be those scenarios where, again, it's the idea of which one's going to give me the bigger benefit.
Mm-hmm.
And that's not always automatic that you will know that. And the idea of, you know what, I don't know what my prior spouse earned.
Yeah.
Well, Social Security does.
Exactly.
They're going to have that. So the idea of, you know what, which benefit is the higher amount, that usually involves make the appointment and have someone look at your record.
And we get the question quite a bit, too. If they say, well, if I do this, is my previous spouse going to find out about it?
Right.
And the answer is no.
Mm-hmm.
Right. They're not going to just proactively say, oh, yeah, so-and-so called up and wants to get half of what
I've always wondered that.
Yeah.
No, especially in a domestic violence or something like that situation, you might be worried about it and you're entitled to that money. So I think it's really important to bring up.
Yep.
Yeah, that's actually – it's good to know.
Mm-hmm.
You guys do this every day, so I just wanted to ask how – difficult is it when you're dealing with clients that are going from two incomes down to one? You might have worked with them for years. You might be a new client. How do you, because we talk a lot about behavioral finance, psychology of money. How do you approach that?
We're talking about one of the reasons for great divorce. Is that why you're tying this in?
No.
Okay. Well, I guess that's where my mind went because unless you're prepared.
Do you reset, I guess? Do you, as you're dealing with the conversation, do you reset as though they're a new client with one income? I mean, you kind of take them down to the ground zero. How do you deal with that?
Well, again, it depends upon where we're at in the relationship. Typically, ideally, we've been working with someone well before that. So we don't try to, I'll say, pick up a project in the middle of something. Hopefully, before you make that big decision, someone retiring, leaving the workforce, you've been planning years ahead.
Mm-hmm.
Because usually, if you're waiting until that year or two before retirement to talk to a professional, the cards are laid.
Mm-hmm.
You have what you have. What you contributed to Social Security is there. The kind of accounts you funded are there. The kind of house you bought 10 years ago, 15 years ago, that you sunk a lot of money into, you know, that's all done. So the idea of is there a benefit of talking to a planner early on in life, that's really where I would come from with this question to say, you know what, before things go bad or south, because one of the reasons for that great divorce, you've been living two separate lives. You've been working. Suddenly one of you has a lot more time or maybe both of you and you're around each other. Maybe you're two different people. And that's what some people find out with that great divorce.
Mm-hmm. We do a lot of talking about estate planning, and it's probably one of the most critical components of a strong financial plan. Maybe in your opinion, the most critical, but I've heard a lot of conversations about it. So when somebody's in a divorce, I just want to hit the high points of the do's and don'ts when it comes to this part of the financial planning process.
It kind of ties into what you mentioned earlier about beneficiaries, you know, just making sure the money flows the way you want it to go. And so that could be updating the estate plan, but in conjunction with beneficiaries, you got to look at both of those scenarios, because whatever you list as a beneficiary on a, like an IRA, for example, or a 401k, that's going to supersede anything you put in your will or a trust or anything like that. So you really have to look at it from a holistic standpoint to say, is my estate plan need adjusted? Probably. If you're going through a divorce, I'd say actually yes. There's no question about that. And then if it's a great divorce too, are your kids of age where you want them to get the money outright? Do they need some handcuffs? Do they need some provisions on at what age they can get to the money? So you got to review the entire estate plan with major life changes. And certainly the great divorce is one of those.
And it really gets complicated. I might laugh and say a silver gray divorce or something when you're thinking about, well, what if my children, my adult children who are married, get divorced? Because you may have gone through a divorce yourself and now your children are married or going through the process of separation. So the idea of beneficiaries and updating things, especially if a spouse or a child were to pass away, where things might work according to law rather than who you would want. You know, they're going to look at the law and say, well, this was the next of kin or this was that person. But if you can list a beneficiary, like Tyler said, that'll supersede that.
And for somebody who is in a situation where they were a homemaker and there was a one-income household and they don't have a working knowledge of what estate planning might look like, let's just kind of run down the list of important documents that you need to have.
Yeah, there's four that come to mind immediately. So it'd be your last will and testament. That's the first one. Your living will. That's the document of do you want artificial life support or not. A durable power of attorney. That's one that's a present day document for things like financial matters and signing off on real estate transactions and you name it. Basically, they can become you from a financial perspective. And then the last one would be a power of attorney for healthcare. So somebody that can make healthcare decisions should you be incapacitated and can't do it for yourself. So those are the four basics. The fifth would be a trust, like we've talked about as well on other shows too. And that's not for everybody. So, but those four basic ones are there. And there's some non-legal documents you could get into as well, like letter of instruction, things like that, documenting user IDs and passwords. They call that your digital assets now. So we can go on and on. But those first four are the critical legal documents.
And are we here to be people, Tracy, or textbook answers? Which one do you want today?
I like the people side. Oh, you know
okay.
That.
All right. Well, let's be real then. If you're in that gray divorce scenario and you've met that next person, and you're in your 70s, 80s, maybe you're 60, who knows? It's after 50, so who knows where you're at? But you've met that next person and you've built another life together. You've moved them in, they're living together, their life is your life, but you've got children before. Maybe those three, four, I'll say those kids with their eyes on mom's money or dad's money going, well, oh my gosh, look at this new person that you're spending all this money on. I would argue that's none of their damn business, but let's say it was, and you're thinking about your estate plan. How do you take care of that new person in your life that, you know what, I don't want to duck my head in the sand. We've built a life in Florida together. They're my partner when we go out. Well, there's perhaps a need there for a trust. Maybe it's something you fund proactively with insurance or something else that, you know what, those kids don't even need to know about that. It's not even part of my estate. Mm-hmm. There's real reasons why you might want to say, I'm going to keep some things private here because this is still my life. This is my money. It's not about you kids right now and you adult children. Pardon me again. I get fired up about these adult
it's
kids
real.
Looking
no,
out
it's,
from
it's real.
You know, mom or dad's money. Yeah. But when you build that next life and you're happy, that's where financial planning can also come into play.
Mm-hmm. And even the scenario where the adult children are not like the vulture scenario, like
okay,
where
okay.
Everything's good, right? Everything's fine. It's still important to make sure you have that conversation and follow, like a lot of times it'll just follow separate family trees, right? So the husband and wife will just split it accordingly to their heirs and that's agreed upon and it's very clean and mm-hmm. it makes it a lot easier. We've mm-hmm. seen that play out very well.
And there are people who have children late in life, so you could possibly have children at 50 that are minors. So we need to talk about a guardianship set up for them too, right?
Yeah, that'd be within the will and so forth as far as some other guardian provisions.
Yeah.
But yeah.
But again, the idea of a blended family and equalization, you hear that, I say that word a lot, but it doesn't mean fair. It means equalize. Mm-hmm. What's fair to you?
Right.
So the idea of, hey, I paid for these kids' college 30 years ago. I've got a new person on the way up. I need to worry about their college. You guys had your chance. You funded your lives. You know, the idea of everything gets divided by four now, they might think that. But if I've got my resources that need to go to a new young person's college or that's how I feel about it and my partner does now, Well, that's the way it should be. Mm-hmm. And again, we really see that when you do financial planning, you pull your head out of the sand, you really get a lot of control, you get a lot of power. And the idea of, you know what, early on, if I can buy that insurance policy, maybe fund that goal while I'm healthy enough, or I can qualify, I can pay that bill, or maybe that new person pays that bill. You know what, if you're not part of my life anymore and we built this life together, at least I'll be entitled to some insurance. Let the kids, let the family get the rest. But that way I have something to protect the life we built.
Another good one I thought of too is just your residence, where you're living. You mentioned building the life in Florida. Maybe that's a second home. Who gets that?
Yeah.
That was actually my next point.
Oh, good.
Talking a little bit about the marital home. I mean, that's tough to break down with a client, I'm sure. Where money is so psychological, where do you take people so that they can evaluate what they should do?
So again, there's a lot of ways you could go at this, but sticking with what you asked earlier about estate documents, there's things called QPERTs, Qualified Personal Residence Trust, that allow the surviving spouse to live there while they're alive, and then you can pass it on to other family members. So there's a use aspect, you get used to it while you're here, mm-hmm. But then it can pass on to the family otherwise. And there's some tax benefits with all that as well, but you can also just do just basic, you know, documentation in a trust on a provision of who gets the house and when and how long and so forth. And that can work out great too, but you got to plan again before things go south and from a spouse dying to have that all lined up to make sure there's no issues with infighting and, you know, so-and-so told me it was mine, right. but she said I could live here, you know, that whole scenario you want to avoid.
And that's where it can be really difficult too, the idea of the emotions of the family coming in and having a family meeting usually ahead of time, especially if we're in that scenario where we're dividing assets later in life, and maybe there are substantial assets at play. I mean, that's where, again, we know money can sometimes bring out the worst in people and a lot of emotion. So having those discussions, again, I can't help but say it doesn't go away. It doesn't get better.
Right.
So to address it early and have a plan is usually the best way to do it.
What about prenups and postnups in this situation? Does that make sense?
Absolutely. Oh, they make things a lot cleaner.
That's where you could see some of the provisions about who's going to live where should they pass. Predecease the other, that can be in the postnup or prenup scenario.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea of did it stay current along the marriage? I mean, there may be some that were drafted 20, 30 years ago, and through the process of life, it may have been out of date, or it may be something that, you know what, this is what it was. And you dust that thing off from 30 years ago and say, what do I have?
Mm-hmm.
And that's important to go through with an attorney to say, is there a postnup that has amended this or overrode this? Because there might be.
Mm-hmm.
And the idea of being aware of what documents you've signed is really important.
Mm-hmm.
And the other side of that, too, is that you could have done this 20 years ago, a postnup, even if you were 60 and got remarried, and now you're 80. And for estate planning, an attorney tells you to add a transfer on death provision to your deed of your property. Well, guess what? That just trumps what you did 20 years ago in your postnuptial or prenuptial document. So, again, staying in tune with that, making sure you're reviewing with the advisors and you got that holistic view is key to make sure that things pass the way you want them to.
And that's true for insurance planning too. I think a lot of people forget about the insurance aspect. You know, when you leave a marriage, a long-term marriage, what kind of insurance do you have separately? So what's on deck?
Yeah, I always think health insurance first. So depending upon where you are at in life, whether you're continuing your spouse's coverage, that might be part of a quid pro order, a qualified domestic relations order, someone paying for health insurance or not, or maybe you're of Medicare age and you enroll that in that yourself, or maybe it's something you need to buy care on the Affordable Care Act or something like that. I mean, there are different situations will lead to different mm-hmm. outcomes.
And we have lots of podcasts on insurance, so please tune into some of those if you want to learn more about that. Potential perils that I want to kind of get into and then we'll wrap it up. A lot of people will try to divide things up on their own. And when things aren't divided correctly, things can go really south very quickly. What advice would you have, or what tips could you give for the proper division of retirement assets?
Well, you don't know what to divide unless you know what you have. So staying organized.
And especially for somebody who's got a situation where you have a homemaker and the other person might handle all the bills.
Yeah. We tell people this all the time. It's specifically couples. It's so valuable to have two people together, even if one is the homemaker, doesn't deal with the bills or the finances, just from an awareness standpoint. Mm-hmm. So going back to being organized, you've got to stay organized throughout the process, but then that makes it a lot easier in the back end. Even when you're talking about drafting documents and how you want it to be split up, that's key. But also when that time comes, should it happen to you, you have at least some foundation of knowing where things sit and you can kind of then envision what it looks on the other side of that. Mm-hmm. But if you're blind to it starting, it's going to just be a nightmare, and the emotions get involved, and that's when you typically make bad decisions.
Yeah.
And again, thinking about the people being real, I mean, there's a reason for the divorce. If there was something going on and there's a break in the trust and you're not even sure, are they telling me where all the assets are? That's, again, where an attorney, a court order comes into play. Because, again, to just go through it and perhaps settle because the emotions are there, you want to get it over with, we understand that, but you're living with that the rest of your life. So making sure you get what you're entitled to, I think, is really important.
So it sounds like overall, put your team together. Get a team together, even if you had one as a married couple, have Plan B team for when you're on your own.
Definitely.
Fantastic. Great. Divorce doesn't have to derail your finances. Smart planning can help you and protect your wealth and reclaim your independence. That's it for today. We hope you enjoyed the podcast and you'll join us again.
Media. Think big.